All right. For anyone who's unaware, Circus Survive are playing tonight, November 17th, with 21 Pilots and Carolina Liar as the opening acts here in beautiful Moravian College.
So this is Radio Pirate here with the guys from Circus Survive. Just wondering, what made you guys choose to record in Studio 4 for the new record since it was self-released and everything?
I guess, Colin, you knew Will from Studio 4.
Oh, how do we...
He's asking...
Yeah, when I did my solo record, I met Will through the guy that I worked with, Vince Reddy, who also engineered the vocals for our record and mixed our record. So I was doing my solo record with him, and he was like, oh, we could probably take, once you're done with the mixes, we could go check them over at Studio 4, because my buddy Will, we work out of there sometimes, and I met Will there, and as soon as I saw the studio, I was just kind of like, whoa, just because it's such a nice studio, and it's so close to us, and usually nothing cool is close to us, as far as studios go, so, yeah, we just stayed in touch, and he was just really easy to work out a deal with when we were like, hey, can we come record there?
Do you want to introduce yourself, guys, quick? I totally
forgot. I'm Colin.
Nick.
Awesome, okay. Well, in an interview from a little while ago, I think it was said that Brendan, the other guitarist, initiated a lot of the music on the album this time instead of, well, you, Colin. But, was that a conscious decision to try something a little different, or did he just have a lot of ideas stockpiled that you were like, all right, go for it?
I think, like, first of all, that was me that said that in an interview, and then I started actually listening back to it, and I think just initially in the beginning, like, it was really Brendan-heavy, which is really great. But then when I listened through it and was like, oh, where did this come from? I mean, it's pretty balanced. Oh yeah, I know, it's charging. But I think in general, it wasn't like a conscious decision at all. None of our records are ever really like that. You know, it kind of just happens. And this time around, well, I did consciously decide to be like less aggressive, I guess. You know, and I used to, I think, be a little more heavy-handed with my ideas and be like, oh, I have this thing, like, let's work on it. And this time I feel like we were just all gelling so well, like, writing in a natural setting, and just Brendan would bring in these great, like, riffs that were already kind of, I don't know, multiple parts, and just in general, I don't know, everything flowed really well, and we were all just writing in a really good flow. So it was just, it happened, and no one fought it, and that was kind of why it went like that.
Setting the record straight here, okay. So, before Violent Waves, you guys have worked with some very talented producers, like Brian McTernan, David Buttrill. Did you learn a lot from these experiences and then apply them when producing yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I feel like every time we did a record, the next time we were writing the next record, we'd be, like, referencing things that happened the time before, you know what I mean? So, I think we definitely took a lot of stuff away and... we're applying a lot of the ideas that we learned through those guys to the songs while we were writing them.
All right.
So you guys are pretty self-sufficient and independent these days. Do you feel that's going to be the future for a lot of bands in the scene?
Definitely seems that way. I mean, you never know. Like, maybe somebody will come up with some crazy new format that, you know,
rework the whole thing.
That changes everything, but at the moment, I mean, it seems like that it's going to start going more independent.
Yeah.
This band, Carolina Liar, actually just their own. They were on Atlantic, and then they also put their next record out on their own, too.
It's the trend.
It's a possibility for a lot of bands, you know.
So in 2010, it was a Record Store Day release. You guys released Appendage, which is a B-side record. Is there going to be anything like that for Violent Waves?
Possibly.
Probably more in the form of, like, singles, like, one song at a time, We just feel like the B-sides this time around, we didn't want to get distracted by working on anything we already knew wasn't going to be making the cut, I think. So as soon as we kind of decided which songs weren't going to make onto the record, we didn't even bother, like, putting too much more energy into it. So it wasn't like we... I feel like the songs that we cut off Blue Sky Noise were almost deliberately thought of as a group, because there were a few songs that we left on there that were interchangeable with some of the ones that we left off, but we did feel like the ones that we cut before were, like, they worked well as a group. We already were thinking ahead, whereas this time we were just like, that doesn't work on this album, that doesn't work on this album. And we've already released one of them recently for a benefit for the Hurricane. But, I mean, you never know. I don't think it would really be a B-side thing. We could put out an EP of... We have some other demo songs that we didn't even record at Studio 4 that I think are awesome. So I guess you never really know.
So you guys did a MySpace transmission, and you covered Nirvana's Scentless Apprentice. What made you guys decide to do that particular track?
I think we're playing Bamboozle that year, and they do a thing called Hoodwink, I think, where some of the bands from Bamboozle do a show the day before, or they just do a full cover set of a band. And so they asked us to do that, and I don't remember how we came up with Nirvana. It was just like
the first thing we all.
Yeah, it was just the first. I was like, let's do Nirvana. All right, so we did it, and we kind of went like all out on it. We have what did we learn, like 15, 16 songs or something? Like we just like went for it. We're like, dude, we're gonna do this. Let's do it.
We rehearsed it a lot.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time preparing for that, and so. When we did the MySpace thing, we had to do a cover song, and I don't remember why we chose that one particularly, just did.
Okay, you guys hear about it every interview, and I have to apologize, but I'll ask it. Esau Andrews creates great art for the albums, and it's a very distinctive feature. Do you give him the music first, and then he interprets that?
Yeah. Well, this record, yeah. That happened.
Almost all of them, he's heard something before he's created it. I think maybe the only exception, ironically, is on Letting Go. And he actually had that image before we even decided on that title, which is kind of funny because they're so fitting. But yeah, all the other ones, I know we sent him demos the first time. And then definitely for Blue Sky, definitely for this one. So he's always had a little bit of a taste and kind of got at least an impression of what it was like.
All right, now maybe you guys can't speak lyrically, but when you're writing the music, does that even cross your mind? Like, oh, this song could create a cool image or something. Like, okay. Just do your thing. And
that's
he
a
does
note
his.
For the record.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not. I mean, I think maybe once in a while you'll get an idea for, like, a video or something like that, maybe. But we're not, I don't think we're, like, playing something like, oh my God, this is going to inspire Esau so good. Like, it just doesn't happen. But we get lucky that it winds up that it does.
Okay, so in another art-related question, in CD form anyway, the first two albums were packaged in a kind of sleeve that covers the whole case, so it kind of preserves the whole image. Was that a conscious decision to preserve it in the largest form, or?
Talking about just the slip sleeve?
Yeah.
Over the jewel case?
Well, yeah, for example, like that, as opposed to, you know,
like, yeah.
Yeah, there's like another, like, fancy thing that we knew we could, like, an option that we were like, that looks cool. I mean, I think in general that the sleeve just makes it look more attractive, and we're just into packaging in general. think probably that's probably Brendan's call. He's always kind of like, he's pretty picky with the layouts and packaging and all that. So I'm sure whenever we had the option to go for that, he was about to go for that.
We also always wanted to not have the name on the booklet. And so we would have it on the sleeve, but then when you opened it up, it wouldn't have that.
This doesn't distract from the art itself.
Just be the painting, you know. Yeah.
Right. Well, I ask that because the last band we were lucky enough to talk to, the Melvins, have an interesting way to package their CDs, where the back is where the front is, really.
So, I've seen this, too.
Yeah, and that's why, to preserve the image without this. Mm. And having, you know, all this legal stuff covering half of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, okay, cool.
So I believe I read somewhere that you guys said recently you started changing up the set list every night. Is that still going on? Is that working for you guys, or did you go?
It worked great. Yeah. The last tour. That's the first tour we ever did that, and yeah, we did it from start to finish. I mean, there was times where you'd subconsciously, I think, certain groups would start to rear their head as like staying, you know, but that just naturally happens. But in general, I think we were super stoked on how it felt to go up there every night with something new, and it gave me at least a new sense of confidence with the band, and everyone seemed to be like excited by it, you know.
It's got to bring new energy every night.
Yeah,
different vibe every night too. So.
Well, also it's just a different kind of like. Your mindset's different when you go into it, because normally a week in, you go up on stage literally not thinking about anything. Like
muscle memory.
Yeah, it's all muscle memory, and you're just like, the set is just there. And even though we got really tight on this tour, there was never that like machine-like kind of feeling to it. Because you always had to kind of make the just common sense connections of certain songs. Like, I don't know. Like, we wouldn't even talk about it usually before. It was just kind of there. We, you know, midway through the tour, the set list was just there. If you had a problem with it, you would say something about it. But otherwise, you just kind of knew what to do because we'd have these transitions with certain songs. And it's just funny how I feel like in the past, that would require like a lot of discussion of tonight we won't do this transition, tonight we won't do that, and we'll do this, and it would get really, but I don't know, it's just, we're just like at a point now where things like that are seamless and easy.
So I gotta ask, I'm not asking for the set list, I don't want to be spoiled, but what's tonight like? Is it a little bit of everything or newer stuff? Or
it's always a little bit of everything. Okay. We try to always do that. Like, I wish maybe we had more balls sometimes and just be like, fuck it, we're gonna play all new album tonight, you know? But I feel like we all are too big of music fans in general to like do that to anybody who would want to hear certain things, so you know, it's. I feel like that'll always be the way our sets are. You know, a little bit of everything.
Okay, I think in the same interview where it was mentioned about mixing up the set list, you were saying about there being on-stage accessories like confetti and balloons and going a little more all out with the show. And taking inspiration from like the Flaming Lips, for example. Will we be seeing Anthony in a giant inflatable ball rolling across the crowd anytime soon?
You know, if that wasn't so associated with the Flaming Lips, we probably would do it. yeah, we like anything that can make it a little more fun. You know, I think tonight's probably way more stripped down. I'm not doing any of that stuff. But,
the college probably won't be happy with it.
Yeah. But we'll figure out something.
So the new record on the lottery, Jeff from Thursday, appears on that. And I was just curious, we were all at their last show in Philly. Were you guys at that?
Mm-hmm.
No. So I know they were giving shout-outs to a lot of bands, but it was the one at the TLA right before New Year's. But I was just curious if you guys were there or anything.
I think we were gone.
We were around.
We were at their last show ever, though.
In Australia?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we played all the sideshows with them, and so their last headliner ever, we were support and watched it go down. It was pretty crazy. It was awesome.
You guys win.
Oh, one up.
This is really off topic. I don't even know why I have it here, but is Jimmy Fallon as nice as he seems?
Yes. He's really nice, actually.
I think.
I was really surprised because I didn't really expect to even see him, you know, because the complex is, like, massive, you know what I mean? You're just going through hallways and stuff, and then you go into your dressing room, and he actually, like, made it a point to, like, come into the dressing room just to thank us for playing and
that's great.
All that nice stuff.
It's refreshing.
And he seemed, like, genuine about it, you know what I mean? It wasn't like a,
yo, Jimmy, you gotta go say hi to all the guests,
you know what I mean? It was cool.
It's refreshing to see that.
So I'm a big vinyl fan, and I know your earlier records go for lots of money on eBay. Will they ever be repressed so I can have a full Circa catalog?
I don't know.
Don't know.
I figured I'd ask.
I'm sure at some point, but...
Well, I don't know if we could ever repress, like...
It wouldn't be the same. I mean, yeah. Anything we do would have to be different. Different art, different colors.
I was just curious. Because I'd like to not pay, like, $300-$400 for cheap stuff.
I don't know if stuff, something like that would be, like, buying up your old back catalog from the old labels or something and then releasing it another way, but...
That's pretty funny. Like, we have friends. We have a lot of friends that are vinyl collectors, and a lot of them have our records. And I, at least three of my friends over the last couple years were like, "Yeah, man, I don't know. I had like a bad month, so I had to sell Juturna." And oh man, and I'm just like, "Wait, what?" And they're like, "Yeah, dude, I got like $400 for that." And I'm just like, "What?" Like, it's just amazing that one of our vinyls can like help someone like make rent. That's fucked. That's really, really weird. But I always keep that in mind now. Like, I have some vinyls. I have an eBay. You know, if shit gets real bad, I'll be at least okay for a month or two.
It's a good plan.
Sign it up too. Say,
All right, so with 2012 being a big year, do you think 2013 is shaping up to be almost as big? Or are we getting way ahead of ourselves?
I feel like, you know, the majority of touring on Violent Waves will probably take place in 2013, just because we really only did our one headlining tour, and most of the year was spent, you know, concentrating on making the album and kind of... did we do anything for Blue Sky Noise in 2012? Or were we pretty much just writing and recording?
Australia.
Right. That was about it. So, yeah, I mean, next year is pretty much going to all be about supporting this record. And who knows what else. You never really know.
So I've got one more question for you, then he's got one for you. I always end my part of the interview by asking, because I do the new music show, I'm going to be winding down, figuring out my top 20 records of the year that I played in my show and whatnot. And I know you guys will be in there on the list, but what would be on your top lists if you had to think of something that was just awesome this year? Check the iPod.
I've been listening to a new Deftones record.
It's awesome.
It's good.
Yeah,
I haven't heard it yet.
It's really good.
The Flying Lotus record that just came out is awesome. And this guy, Clark, put out a record card called Iridelphic, and I've been listening to that constantly. So those are probably my favorites this year.
The new Tame Impala is really good. The newest Wild Nothing's probably my favorite record from last year, or from this year. I really like the new Bad Books. Was Balance's record 2012?
No, that was
that 2011? Really? New Casket Ladder is awesome.
Cool. All right, and it's the Desert Island question. One album, rest of your life, no hope of rescue.
I've already heard Nick answer this question, and it's a pretty good answer, so.
Really?
Yeah. Enema from Tool?
No.
That's what I was just thinking right now, but I don't know.
Oh, really? Dark Side.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
And they were like, why? And you're like, because it's perfect.
Wait, didn't that just happen?
Yeah.
How'd you see that?
I got Google alerts, bitch.
Oh, shit. I'm like, I feel like I just typed that, like, yesterday. Shit. All right, I'll take it back, Dark Side.
Okay.
Like, really, you're going to listen to Tool forever? You're
going to go mentally insane. We're not going to live that long, so.
It's crazy. That's true. Desert Island.
It was awesome.
Year.
Realistically, I'd be surfing the whole time.
Trying to catch fish while you're out here.
I get so sick of that record, so I'd rather not bring one I like. Mm-hmm. Probably bring one that I don't like, so I'd get even more sick of it. Remember the ones I liked as being good?
He's got the right idea.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, where can people find the new album since you guys are putting it out yourself and, yeah.
On our website.
That makes sense. I suppose that would be circussurvive.com.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Or if they want to just ignore everything we say, they can just go to iTunes, like everybody else did. We're like, yeah, we have a record for $5, or iTunes has it for $10. And everyone goes to iTunes.
I did CD and vinyl from your website. So
that's correct.
Did it the right way.